This reading this evening is taken from the book of Daniel. I'll be reading from chapter 1, verse 8. But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with a portion of the king's delicacies or with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested of the chief of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself.
Good evening, everyone. Good to see each and every one of you. Always thankful for the opportunity we have to worship God in spirit and in truth. You know, the book of the month last month was Ezekiel, and just next on my target list was Daniel. And then, John did his What Say Ye, which I thought was very good, and very thankful for John, also Jason. I was already halfway through my outline on this lesson when John did his What Say Ye. But I did find it very encouraging that we kind of came to about the same conclusion, is that really Daniel chapter 1 is a powerful chapter because really you have some of God's people really in a situation where the government, the educational system, is really trying to indoctrinate them, really assimilate them. And I was already about halfway through, but certainly John laid a very good foundation for me to move forward with that. But we will have Daniel as the book of the month for this month, and looking forward to it. Daniel has always been one of my favorite books. And going back, I remember a lesson I preached when I was 18, and it was, what happens if the government goes bad? And it was almost completely based off of Daniel, because Daniel finds himself in a situation where the government is not really for the Jews, not for God's people underneath the Old Testament. They are surrounded by people that don't hold their beliefs, and in fact would be totally happy and encouraged if they would just drop their beliefs and leave them behind. But certainly Daniel and his companions are going to show a great degree of faith as they are in a foreign country, a foreign land, and they're trying to live a faithful life in relation to God. I do believe that Daniel was written by Daniel, and Daniel's name means God is judge, or God is my judge. And what a powerful name that is. So many times when we look at their prophets, their names really tell us something important. But you think about that, God is judge, or God is my judge. See, Daniel, if he just gave in to all the things that were going on at Babylon, he would have been very well accepted in many ways. He wouldn't have had laws drawn up against him. He wouldn't have been persecuted in any way. But he would just say, you know what? I'll just eat all that food at the king's table, and I'll just be buddy-buddy with everybody here in Babylon. His life perhaps would be easier and had a little less road bump on the way. But Daniel was part of the royal family. When we track Daniel's lineage back, I believe him to be a descendant of David. He was of royal descent. And as Babylon comes in and really takes out the southern kingdom of Judah, it's going to take time to take over the southern kingdom, and there are going to be multiple deportations of the people of Israel to Babylon. So these people are being deported, the God's people, the people of the southern kingdom. You know, imagine if another country took over the United States and just started deporting the people to another place. That's kind of what's going on here with Daniel. Although we're not 100% sure, I think a lot of this happens when Daniel is very early in age. A lot of people believe he might even be around 17 years old when all this starts. So Daniel and his companions are really going to model a strong faith in hard times. A faith that is going to be persecuted, that's going to be attacked, that's going to have a lot of things. You know, as we look at chapter 1, which is going to be our focus, although we're not going to be able to read the entire chapter, although we could, as we start to look at that chapter, we start to see some of this unfold. We see Daniel and his companions, and we see that their names are changed. Talk about being taken out of your culture and your world and inserted into another culture. And this is not the only time we see this in the Bible. We see many, many changes in the Bible. In fact, do you remember Joseph? When Joseph is brought into the Egyptian society, and we remember that his name is changed. We remember they tried to get him an Egyptian wife, and really, I think, tried to get him into that culture as much as they could. But we look at Daniel and his companions, and we see their names changed to Belshazzar and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And these four individuals in the first six chapters of Daniel are going to model what a godly person should do with the government against you. I mean, what godly people should do when the educational system possibly is against you. We see these individuals stay faithful to God in very challenging situations. And they're going to be challenged from the get-go. We see that Daniel and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, of course, that's their Babylonian names. But as they're brought into Babylon, I believe all of them had some connection to the royal family. All the other people are really just kind of brought to Babylon in captivity and probably would not have had the best living conditions. But Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and Daniel, they are taken to the palace. And really, this is, I think, an assimilation plan of the Babylonian authorities. If you think about it, you take over a nation, you take the nobility, you take the rulers, you take the king, you educate them with your educational system, and then you know what? You'll convert them, and then they will help to keep everybody else in line. I think that really was Babylon's goal. It's let's get these nobles of the Jews, and we'll treat them kindly. We'll feed them nice. We'll educate them. And I'm not saying all their education is bad. I think that they actually received a very good secular education. The Babylonians are known for their education, the libraries, and the wealth of information that they had. These young men are going to be educated for 3 years, and they're probably going to receive math, astronomy, architecture, the modern education of the day. They're going to get a good education, secularly. But while that's happening, they're going to do everything they can to get these individuals to drop their beliefs, to become Babylonians, to drop their faith, to drop their allegiance to God, slowly but surely. You know, Daniel, when you think about him, he's not, I wouldn't say he's your stereotypical prophet. When you look at a lot of the prophets are preaching to the Israelite people. They're preaching to the Israelites and saying, let's get together and let's do those things that are right and good. Daniel, when you really look at his situation, he is going to be dealing with the elite. He's going to be dealing with the kings and the politicians. He's not dealing as much with the Israelite people as he is with people in authority. And we're going to see how an individual following God would handle such situations. I think with Daniel and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, I think we see individuals with integrity and character. They serve as great followers of God in a foreign nation where other people would fold underneath the pressures of a foreign land. And I think they make quite an impact on Babylon. I think they make quite an impact on Babylon. And the people that get to see how they conduct themselves when laws are made against praying, when they are told to get involved in false worship, we get to see how these young men were tested and how they stayed true to God. The first six chapters of Daniel really is really the history, and you really see it unfold. And then the last few chapters, we really just have a series of visions. But that is kind of some of the background, if we can. But you do ask yourself the question, how did God's people end up in a foreign land? And they ended up in a foreign land because they did not keep the promises of God. If you remember Moses, when he was on the edge of the promised land, and he was going to die, and he wasn't going to go in the promised land, and Joshua was going to take over that, God says, I'm going to give you this land. And in Deuteronomy chapter 8, it's the great if chapter, if you will, is the Israelites should have known what would happen if they did not stay faithful to God. Because if you read Deuteronomy chapter 8, it starts out with, if you do this, this will happen. And then you get about halfway through and it says, if you do this, this will happen. But just a little bit of Deuteronomy chapter 28. Moses talking to the people before God gives them a nation. It says, now it shall come to pass, if you diligently obey the voice of the Lord your God, to observe fearfully all his commandments which I command you today, that the Lord your God will set you high above all nations of the earth, and above these blessings shall come upon you and overtake you, because you obey the voice of the Lord your God. And then it goes through a series of blessings for the people if they obey God. Deuteronomy chapter 28, verse 15, it switches gears. It says, but it shall come to pass, if you do not obey the voice of the Lord your God, to observe carefully his commandments and his statutes which I command you today, that all these curses will come upon you and overtake you. And we start to see those curses. You know, throughout the Old and the New Testament, God has always been consistent on obedience. God wants us to obey. It doesn't matter, Old or New Testament, God wants us to obey. When God's people obeyed in the Old Testament, they were blessed. And when they didn't obey, it led to the curses. And one of those curses was they were destroyed by another nation. So we find Daniel in this situation. And in Daniel chapter 1, verses 1 and 2, we really start to receive some of that background information. We see the time, we see some of the period, we see some of that really rich historical information in verses 1 and 2, giving us some background. In verses 3 through 7, we start to see a little bit of what is going on in terms of the selection of these men. We see in verse 4, it says, young men in whom there was no blemish, but were good looking, gifted in all wisdom, possessing knowledge and quick to understand, who had the ability to serve in the king's palace, and whom they might teach the language and the literature of the Chaldeans. The Babylonians were excited about Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego coming to town because they viewed them, I believe, as part of their master plan. If we can take the royal house, and we can educate them, and we can convert them to be Babylonians and give in to all the social pressures and become like us, then we can really convert this whole nation and really keep them under wraps, if you will. So we see this training that is going to happen with these young men. 3 years of training in the king's court to be prepared for the king's court. We see that they're going to be trained in language. I believe this would also include math, history, architecture, astronomy. They're going to receive a very good secular education. And I think it's something to note here that God did not stop these men from getting a secular education. Now, I don't try to put a secular education up on a pedestal too much because I think God's Word is the most powerful and wonderful thing, and that's what we need to be cling to. But we don't see anywhere in Scripture where God really tells people, you know what, avoid secular education. Secular education can help us in certain circumstances. It can help us in our lives and our livelihood. There's nothing morally wrong with architecture and some of these subjects. They are good. And actually, we see that I believe this education is going to help these men as they're trying to influence the leaders of the land because they have a secular education. I think that our faith and the Bible is really all we need, but certainly we understand that God does not hold these individuals back from a secular education. A secular education, I mind you, that I think the Babylonians wanted to use to assimilate the Israelites. And in some ways, it was almost like they were trying to bribe the Israelites. They would lay out a spread and say, come and eat, we're going to educate you, we're going to feed you, we're going to bless you. They're in a very good situation in the physical terms. And these men are going to make their lives harder because they're trying to cling to their faith. You understand that your life could get harder because you cling to the faith, because you cling to God. Their life has probably been a lot easier if they just said, we'll go along with it. We'll be assimilated. We'll become part of the Babylonians. We'll do exactly what they say. We'll stick to the script. We'll do what they want us to do. And they would have been fed well. They would have fit right in. But that's not what these men do. Their faith is going to be challenged. Their faith is going to take some risks. And their faith, certainly, we're going to see, has some courage. So perhaps it's not appropriate, but perhaps it is. I kind of came to the same conclusion as John. When I look at Daniel chapter 1, I see an educational system. An educational system that has some good secular points, but also in terms of just math and those type of things, but also there is that idea of the temptation to go along with the world. And I think this is still around today. There's nothing new under the sun. And I can tell you that education has been a battlefield throughout history. And I think that Christians should view education as something that we need to think very seriously about as a subject in terms of the Christians and how we're involved in education and how we try to aid education and how we try to change education. Because I think it's a big topic. It's one that should be considered and thought about. Because we see the Babylonians are really leveraging this to try to turn people really away from God. You know, Hitler said this. He said, "Let me control the textbook and I'll control the state." There's a lot of truth in that. Let me control the textbook and I'll control the state. You know what Hitler did with some of the people in Germany? We have to be mindful. We have to be diligent. And I think that many of our young people who do go off to college, I think it's a situation they have to be mindful and they have to be diligent. Because there are a lot of ideas out there that they are trying to change individual thinking away from God and try to get them to fit the script that the world wants them to say. To accept things that the world wants them to accept. That's exactly what's going on here with these individuals. And as we look at them go through this, and they are getting into this education system, if you will, I want you to see how they handle their faith and some things that transpire. Picking up in verse 8, it says, "But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's delicacies, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested of the chief of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself." Now God had brought Daniel into the favor and goodwill of the chief of the eunuchs, and the chief of the eunuchs said to Daniel, "I fear my lord the king, who has appointed your food and drink, for why should we see your faces looking worse than the young men who are your age? Then you will endanger my head before the king." You know, I think Daniel sees this situation, and there's a lot of commentaries, you can read a whole lot on what's going on here, but really, I think that the Babylonian system is trying to mold Daniel and his companions. And I think Daniel has put in his heart, as we see in verse 8, he has purposed in his heart, he is not going to be corrupted by what's going on in Babylon. And there's a whole lot going on in Babylon. And there's a whole lot that could go on if Daniel gets involved in some of these schemes that happen. Like I said, there's a lot of different commentaries, but there's a lot of things that Daniel could be in a slippery slope if he gets involved with a lot of these feasts that are going on. Think about what might happen at a Babylonian feast. Number one is there's probably going to be some food there that would be against the dietary laws of the Old Testament. And that would be a violation of Daniel's faith. That's a possibility. Also, a lot of these feasts were a lot of times associated with idol worship. And if Daniel shows up to such a thing, it could be very well perception and reality. And we have to be careful about such things and mindful of such things as Christians. Perception is reality many times. If Daniel shows up to the feast for this God, that's a false God, and people see him there, they're going to make certain assumptions and things. So Daniel has quite a situation here. He's got a lot of challenges being in a nation that's not for God, a nation that is trying to assimilate him and the companions away from God. He's got a lot of things to think about. I don't want to violate God's law. I don't want to violate the dietary law. You know what? A lot of these feasts are associated with idol worship. And you know what? There's going to be a lot of perception, and people are going to be watching me in the way I conduct myself. And you know what? Daniel makes some requests. I think Daniel takes a risk. Don't you think? He goes to the person that's over him, and he says, "You know what? I don't want to be involved with these feasts. I don't want to be involved in what's going on here. In fact, it would be safer for me if I just kind of eat vegetation," which actually I think that word is associated with fruit and vegetables. And I think if you dig into the language, I think it means fruit and vegetables. But Daniel says, "You know what? It'd be safer for me if I just eat fruits and vegetables." And we see that Daniel makes this request. I think he takes a risk based on his faith. Have you ever taken a risk based off your faith? Well, what do you mean by that? What I mean by that is you know God has said something, and because God has said something, you're going to try to stay true to that. You're going to try to accomplish that. You're going to try to do that in your life, and you know that it might end up with some risk being taken on by yourself. I think Daniel takes a risk. He takes a risk to cling to his faith, and I think we have to take risks many times to follow the Lord. You know that God talks about so many things. There's so many risks that we could talk about, but God tells us to evangelize the world. You know, there's some risk with evangelizing the world. There's some people that can be offended. There's some people that there's some risk with evangelizing the world. When's the last time you took a risk because of your faith? Because God said, this is what I want you to do. This is what I need you to do. Do we take risks based off our faith? When we do what God says, even though we know it could be risky to us, and it could be detrimental to us, Daniel could have possibly been killed right here. The eunuch could have said, you know what? I don't like you asking these questions. Off with your head, you know? And actually, you see the eunuch is very bothered by this, because it seems like he likes Daniel, and it seems like they have a good relationship. It seems like the providence of God is involved in this. And we see that the eunuch worried about himself. He says, well, if you avoid all these meals and you start the way your look starts deteriorating, you know, this is going to come back on me. Have you ever taken a risk for your faith? I think that's something to think about. I think that's what's going on with Daniel. But I think Daniel trusts the providence of God. And I think we have to trust that in our lives too. Is that if God be for us, who can be against us? We think of Romans chapter 8 and 28, where it talks about if we're called according to His purpose, we have that idea that things will work out. Maybe not on this plane of life, but the next. You take risks based off your faith, because God says that I'm going to do it, and if it leads to a risky situation, I will take that. God is with us, and certainly God is with Daniel, and you see this throughout chapter 1. But certainly He takes a risk based off of His faith. You know, you talk about education systems, and you think about that. Education has been a battle in this country since the beginning. In fact, when school started in this country, there's a lot of discussion about the schools in this country. I'm sure most of you are familiar that the Bible used to be the textbook. The Bible used to be the textbook. Many of the founding fathers, I believe Benjamin Rush in particular, he wrote whole papers defending why the Bible should be the textbook of the nation. And you know what? One of the first breakups of schools in the nation was actually all the schools were Protestant-based, and Catholics kind of said, you know what? We don't really like our kids being indoctrinated by these Protestant schools because all the schools are Protestant. So the Catholics said, you know what? Let's make our own schools. And then everybody said, you know what? We don't really want those Catholic schools being funded, so we'll make a law. So the Catholic schools can't be funded, but all these Protestant schools can be funded. And you know what happened is now that law is used against all religious schools. All schools in this country were religious at one point. All of them had a religious foundation, and all of them were funded by the government. But education's always been a battle. And Daniel's got a battle on his hands in Babylon. He's got a battle on his hands. You know, we tried to educate the Indians. And I believe that some Indian chiefs actually wrote a letter to Benjamin Franklin. I could be wrong on this, but I'm not going to be wrong on the letter. But they wrote a letter to Benjamin Franklin, the Indians did, the Native Americans, and they wrote a letter to Benjamin Franklin, and they said, we don't really like you educating our children. They said, when you're done educating them, and they return, they can't hunt, they can't fish, they can't do anything that we need them to do. So the chief wrote a letter back to Benjamin Franklin and said, you know what? We appreciate you wanting to educate our children. Let me say that we're not going to send any of our kids to be educated there anymore. But we would like to extend an invitation for you to send your kids to us, and we'll educate them in the ways of the Native Americans. You know, education's always been a battle. It's always been a battle. And I think Daniel shows us that we can stay faithful in a system that is not perfect, a system that's even trying to assimilate and trying to corrupt many things. Education's always been a battle, and always will be a battle. But Daniel takes a risk based off his faith. Have you ever taken a risk based off your faith? As we continue on in the text, we see many things that unfold. But we look at verses 11 through 16. Is that we see that Daniel says, I would like to just partake of these things, and they have a trial period. It says, so Daniel said to the steward, verse 11, whom the chief of the eunuch had set over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, please test your servants for 10 days, and let them give us vegetables to eat, and water to drink. Then let our appearance be examined before you, and the appearance of the young men who eat the portion of the king's delicacies, and as you see fit, so deal with your servant. So he consented with them in this manner, and tested them 10 days. So not only did Daniel take a risk going to talk to the eunuch, I think trying to really maintain his faith, and he's dealing with a lot of different various challenges here, but Daniel's willing to take on a challenge. When's the last time you challenged your faith? Now, there's a lot of people, it doesn't take much to challenge their faith. In fact, a lot of people, their faith is tested by inconvenience. A lot of people's faith is tested by inconvenience. Well, that's just inconvenient. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to get involved in that. You know, I'm not going to help the church with that because that kind of inconvenience me. You know, I'm not going to attend services. That inconvenience is me. Some people's faith is just tested by the smallest little things. Daniel says 10 days. 10 days. I'll take on the challenge. I'll just eat these things, and you can test me after these days. So this is, I don't think this is easy. He's walking away from the king's table. He's walking away from all these delicacies. He's walking away from the table of good and plenty. And he says, I'm going to take a little bit of a harder road. When's the last time you challenged your faith? You know, I can't help but think of Moses. Hebrews chapter 11. Remember Moses? They're killing all the Israelite children because Pharaoh's nervous about the Israelite population growing. Mom takes Moses, makes that ark, basically, and floats them there, and Pharaoh's daughter finds him, and Moses is raised in Pharaoh's presence. He's raised in Pharaoh's house. Moses gets what an education Moses probably got. And we think about his education, we think about all the delicacies that Moses got. And you know what? Moses walked away. Moses walked away from the table. He walked away from the delicacies. He walked away from prosperity. And Hebrews chapter 11, we certainly see that. Hebrews chapter 11, verses 24 and 3:26. It says, by faith, Moses, when he became of age, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt, for he looked to the reward. Why did Moses walk away from the table? Why did Moses walk away from prosperity? Why did Moses walk away from a physically blessed life? He walked away because of his faith. When's the last time you took a risk because of your faith? I'm going to do this because God told me to do it. I know it might end up in a risky situation, but I'm going to do it because God told me to. When's the last time you challenged your faith and said, you know what, I'm going beyond inconvenience. I'll do what God asks. And it might be challenging. It might be hard. It might be difficult. It might be adverse. It might be saying no to things on the physical plane of life. Moses walked away. Daniel. And these men walked away from the king's table. It would have been a lot easier to just eat the delicacies of the king's table. It would have been easier just to assimilate. It would have been easier, but it wouldn't have been the way of God, and it wouldn't have been the way of faith. You know, as we continue in Daniel chapter 1, we just see this unfold. And really, Daniel chapter 1 just sets up, I mean, the first six chapters of Daniel, I mean, you talk about really an action-packed chapter. When was the last time your faith, you took a risk because of your faith? When was the last time you challenged your faith? You understand that challenges are part of our walk with God. I think it's James chapter 1, verse 3. It says, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience. The testing of your faith. When was the last time your faith was tested? When was the last time your faith was challenged? We see that with these men. And really, we're going to see that as they are going to be tested in a few days, as John said, an oral examination, and we're going to see that these men do quite well that are serving the Lord, but they're going to need continued courage in Babylon. This is really just step one. Walking away from the king's table is just step one. They are going to be tested again and again and again in a foreign land. They're going to make a law and say, you can't pray. How is Daniel going to respond? They're going to say, you need to worship this. How do those men respond? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men are going to be tested in a foreign land. They took risks for their faith. Their faith was challenged. And we're going to see that their courage has to continue throughout their lives. You know, something believed but not lived is not biblical faith. Something believed but not lived is not biblical faith. Something believed but not lived is not biblical faith. These men we see biblical faith. They say the right things, but then they do the right things. And certainly that's what we want to do throughout our lives. When's the last time you took a risk for your faith? When was the last time your faith was challenged? When was the last time that you realized, I need courage to live the walk that God wants me to live? Perhaps this evening you need to become a New Testament Christian. That would take courage. Perhaps you need the prayers of the church. We'd love to help you in any way we can this evening if you come and we stand as we sing.